The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Talk about the Leafs a lot.
To bring me a letter that never was. I'm not sad or happy, just living.
All right, a little Moody Manitoba for y'all here. Let's joining me in the studio, Rob Washburn, for our live version of Consider This. Rob, welcome to the studio.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Great to have you. And joining us in the studio today is the Birdman of Coburg. And I don't know if we should actually be calling you that, but a lot of folks are calling you the Birdman of Coburg. And I just think of Burt Lancaster when I think of that. But we're here to talk to Bill Thompson today. We're going to talk a little bit about what's happening down at the harbor, and we'll talk to him. I'd like to talk to him how he got involved with all of this as well. But, we're going to focus on the bylaw, obviously, and how that works out. But I've got a tune for you, Rob, and we're going to play a couple of seconds of this for you just because so listeners have an idea of what we're talking about here.
Beneath its snowy metal cold and clean, the unborn grass lies waiting for its coat to turn to green. Snowbird sings a song he always sings and speaks to me of flowers that will bloom again in spring. When I was young, my heart was young then too. Anything that it would tell me, that's the thing that I would do. But now I feel such emptiness within, for the thing that I want most in life's the thing that I can. Spread your tiny wings and fly away, and take the snow back with you where it came from on that day. The one I love forever is untrue, and if I could, you know that I would fly away with you. The breeze along the river seems to say that he'll only break my heart again should I decide to stay. So little snowbird, take me with you when you go to that land of gentle breezes where the peaceful waters flow. Spread your tiny wings and fly away, and take the snow back with you where it came from on that day. What I love forever is
Snowbird and Anne Murray right there. We didn't play the whole song. I know there's going to be callers going, why didn't you play the whole song? I love that song. It was one of those things I vowed never to do was play that track. And I figured appropriate for today, though, because we're talking about the birds in the harbor. Unfortunately, they don't get to jump on an airplane and fly to the southern climes. They stay here. And we're talking to Bill Thompson. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Very great to have you in the chair. Now, we had Teresa Rickaby in here last week talking about this very issue, the issue of feeding wild waterfowl at the harbor. Now, she said that they'd put an amendment through that you could apply for an exemption under the bylaw so that you could continue to feed the birds during the particularly extreme weather conditions. And that was something we talked about. And that's something that she said, you know, the council said, no, just come here and apply for an exemption, and you'll be granted an exemption, more than likely. What's up with that, Bill?
Well, can I back it up a year?
Let's go back a year, shall we?
Yes, Larry Sherwin was Parks and Rec last winter, and that's when everything started. And after a couple of months, the council ended up with an amendment which virtually said, if there's a problem, that we will seek professional, ecologically scientific information before making a decision. Well, in 3 months, nobody did anything at all. This year, Teresa Rickersby, and you've taken Larry's place, rewrote that for an amendment which actually virtually said that in extreme weather conditions, and that is put out by Environment Canada, that a person, a private individual, could apply to the council office for a delegation presentation at the one of the council meetings.
Right.
But bring justification, photographs, and I forget what else there was. There was something else that you had to have these when you go to plead your case.
Evidentiary testimony is what they're looking for.
Yes, well, photos and everything, yes.
Yeah.
So my question was, well, if Environment Canada has, and right now actually, has said this is the coldest February on record, well, I haven't gone to the council because I'm not about to wait for a week to suit a council meeting when the birds are dying.
But this was an exemption you could have applied for at the beginning of the season, though. And one of the things Teresa said to me was that he could have made the presentation at the beginning of the season to say, okay, in cases of extreme weather, I want the ability to go down and feed birds. And she said you could have applied for that exemption at that time. And, you know, based on everything she's heard, you probably would have been granted that exception. Right. It would have been at the beginning of the season, and you could have therefore done this without any kind of bylaw enforcement.
Well, last year, as I said, I was approached the councils I don't know how many times, and it was always put off for different reasons, but primarily it was because of we don't know what we're doing.
Right.
We need to get all the experts in. And I said, you look out the window, you see they're freezing, and anybody who missed last winter by looking out the window, not being extreme, I don't know where they were. Now, why the council couldn't have made the decision when they look out and see it, why can't the council make a decision? Why does it have to be a private individual come up?
Well, and then there's a very good reason for that. First of all, we're talking about the there's the Waterfowl Act, there's the Migratory Birds Act, there's provincial legislation that would prevent the municipality itself from changing the regulations. Now, the way the rules are, though, is if a private citizen or a group of delegates make a presentation to council for an amendment or an exemption, that they can do so, but the council can't apply to council for an exemption under the provincial guidelines. At least that's the understanding that I have. It would require a group, a delegation, or an individual to come to council to make the request for the exemption. At that point, the council would weigh the evidence. And and the other thing I want to point out really quickly is this is a new council, too. This seems to be a very...
Well, three of them are.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But we're talking about people who are willing to do a little more than necessary, perhaps, at this time around. Because
but they're still not making the decisions. That's the tail wagging the dog.
Well, what they need is someone from the citizenry, i.e. yourself, to come forward with either a delegation or a presentation by an individual to apply for the exemption. And from what I've spoken to, I mean, I've spoke to Teresa Rickerby about it. I spoke to John Henderson about it. Both of them have said the same thing. It's like a no-brainer for them. If you make the presentation to council, there's a pretty good chance. Now, they didn't guarantee it, but there's a pretty good chance that you will be able to get the exemption under the bylaw. Wouldn't that be a lot easier than...
Well, not really, because compassion and common sense comes into it. Not everything has to do due process. That tends to be the... The term this year is everything has to go due process. I'm not too keen on the due process. I'm keen on survival of these birds.
Right.
Paperwork, going to meetings and meetings, which unfortunately councils do that. If you see a problem, you respond to it, not waiting. I picked 87 birds up last year. So far, I picked up 8 because there has been... kind of a late start for the winter. It is just as bad. It is just as cold.
Speak fissure.
And the birds are starving. From Ottawa, I mean, when I think in Ottawa, the swans are sheltered. They're fed through tax people. From I work with a lot of the wildlife people in Barcoven, Quinte West, down that way. And also last year I was with a few of the guys from M&R rescuing some some birds. And I gave them birds that I found starved. And they said that. No muscle mass. They're starved. Whatever. And there wasn't a problem with that. But I guess where my problem is the council, they represent the people.
Right.
Can they not make a decision by themselves without going through paperwork? If they look out the window and saw the place flooded, why would they make a decision, or would they wait for somebody to make a delegation come in and say, the place is flooding, what do you think? You look out, you see it, you see a forest fire, you see people dying, whatever, you help them.
Absolutely.
You don't go through the paperwork, whatever. You can do that later on.
But again, we're talking about provincial. I mean, the fact that the municipality has a bylaw, in my opinion, is sort of redundant, because the bylaw that's really there, that they're enforcing, of course, is the provincial legislation.
But they'd never enforced it. In the summertime, you get on to Victoria Park. I live right on the park.
Mm-hmm.
And there are hundreds and hundreds of people throwing pizzas, French fries, hamburger bits, whatever. And I even went to bylaw guys who were walking by and pointed out, and they just kind of looked at me as, well, I don't know, we don't do that.
So what do you think's motivating them then?
Motivating
the bylaw enforcement. What's the motivation?
The council?
Yeah.
As far as I can see, this isn't even about birds. This is about marine expansion. The exact area where I'm feeding the birds, as you probably well know, there's a proposal for 120 boat slips directly where we are. When we went to the town meeting last year, it was a resounding, the people, the public was there, it was standing room only, and they said, no, you're not. Why? Don't do it. Well, the council went back to get a revision because they want to drive that through. Now, I understand that revision's already been back in the council offices for 2 months. Why are they sitting on it?
Well, that's a good question. On the line, we have Pete Fisher. Pete, you have a question?
Yeah, Dave, I was just going to say about, it's sort of similar to what Bill's talking about now. I believe you said that Teresa and John Henderson said that all that's needed is a delegation, but in reference to what Bill was saying, I believe they did make one last year, if I'm not mistaken, and I very well could be, but I believe they did make one last year, and as far as I remember, and again, I could be wrong, there was no delegation that came forward then.
That's right.
Well, I don't know how the changes were made last year. I really don't. I think that was a discussion by Miriam Mouton, who I think introduced that on your behalf, did she not?
No. No, the only thing that Miriam Mouton introduced for me was to cancel my fines.
So she waited.
Well, that's what I mean, Dave. Like, if they did it last year, my point is, Dave, if they did it last year, I think that it's political talk that they can't do it this year, or just, you know, let it go for this year. And then I have full confidence that this year's council will do it. But I think last year's council did sit on the fence for long enough.
Well, I think then, and that's been part of the problem, though. I think what we're seeing here, and this is why I can understand Bill's frustration, because, I mean, yeah, we have a new council, and we seem to have a bit more of an active council, in my opinion, anyway. But what we saw, as you say, Pete, was really nothing more than the council going, oh, all right, we'll relent and we'll waive the fees. But they still didn't get to the crux of the issue, which was the request to have a delegation come to council.
No, and I agree, and that's what I say about Teresa. With Teresa saying that all somebody has to do is come up with an amendment, I'm not really sure that really has to happen. I think they could sort of say, you know, drop it. How long is this going to last for? Like 2 or 3 more weeks? I think for what it is, and as Bill would state, and as people know, that I've been down there ever since Bill got a ticket, and it was certainly well publicized on Sunday. Nobody bothered to show up. So like I say, I certainly think the town should wave the white flag for this year and just let it go for this year, work on it for next year, and talk to get all, like Teresa said, and I fully support what Teresa says, get all interested people. Now, if Bill wants to come, that's great. He should come. If he doesn't want to come, well, then, you know, so be it for that. But I certainly think that all interested parties should be allowed to come to the table, work on it. But the town has certainly made it clear that they aren't going to enforce it. And if they aren't going to enforce it, then just say that they're not going to enforce it and let it go for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
It's a really interesting debate. I think, you know, what this comes down at the heart of is the enforcement of bylaws, but also how things are reported. But and on top of that, just to make it even more complex, I think you've got two different sides sort of playing off of this council. One is people like yourself, Bill, and others who support you, who want to see the bylaw be waived and the birds be allowed to be fed. But on the other side, you know, you've got this pressure from the Ministry of Natural Resources coming down saying, you know, you've got to follow our rules and all these acts that are in place. And also you have the naturalists and those who support this sort of more naturalized thing, which is just let Mother Nature take its course. And you've got both these things sort of playing on both sides of the council. I look at them and I really feel for them because, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, if you turn a blind eye, then you're going to have, you know, whatever, you know, group come down and say, well, we're not, you know, we're not supposed to feed them for a reason. And you see this go back and forth. It's like a ping pong ball going back and forth. I mean, how do we resolve this so that all parties are going to back off? You know, I don't know, you know, it's fine to say wave it, but how do you solve this in the long term?
Essentially, Rob, and I'm just getting on the bus to go up to Whitby for the Cougars game, but essentially, and I'll say this and then I'll let it go, I don't know whether the M&R has been involved yet. The M&R certainly, there's another problem there where they could certainly have a delegation before council and, you know, speak the word. But if they haven't done that yet, again, you're just talking in, you know, A side is talking and B side is talking. And for my problem, my issue is if they have the bylaw, then enforce a bylaw, otherwise don't have it. Because they certainly don't, like, you know, if I had a parking ticket, I certainly couldn't go and say, you know, don't give me a ticket. In other words, if it's here to enforce, enforce it.
Well, parking enforcement and bylaw enforcement are two different things entirely, though, Pete.
I mean, but they're done by the same people.
Well, no, they're not.
They are.
One's done by a group of parking enforcement officers, and the other group's done by a bylaw enforcement officer.
It's the same people.
I know them.
I know they have different mandates, though, don't they?
Well, they might have different mandates, but I can tell you it's the same people, and I think Bill would agree on that.
Right. Well, thanks for your call, Pete. Appreciate it. As always.
No problem.
Thank you, buddy.
Take care.
Enjoy the game.
Thank you.
So Pete's on his way to the Cougars, on his way to get on the bus with the Cougars.
I think this is really interesting because, you know, the whole issue of bylaws and bylaw enforcement has been a real sore spot in this town. I mean, we had the Boulevard Garden incident where somebody was reporting. And one of the things about bylaws is that it is often triggered by complaint. And I was wondering, you know, how you felt about that and how the bylaw enforcement process works. Maybe you could talk a bit about that.
Well, what I found out, and you're correct, it is complaint-driven. For example, last year, and just to back up on how I got started, someone gave me information that there was a gray lag domestic goose dumped on the beach. Wings were clipped. That was 21 January. I went down there, and of course, as you know, last winter was bad news. So it's not the kind of weather you're out strolling. I went down there, saw it, and then I saw how dire the circumstances were, and I thought I started feeding right then, and I fed 7 days a week, twice a day, through to the end of March.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as the fields were clear, and the same thing applies here, if the fields are clear, natural food's available, I'm not down there. The end of March, in fact, the mayor said the other day that the number of birds have increased from 50 to 250 because of feeding. That is incorrect. Birds do not talk to each other. They say, go to Coburg, you get the handouts. You can go down the one day and there's nothing. You go down the next day, there are hundreds. They go Peace Park, they go to the lake, they go everywhere, all over the place. So to kind of blame it on one thing, if you stop the feeding, we won't have the crowds, that is not true. Now, Joan Chalovich, I wasn't here in Colbrook at the time, she stood up at a council meeting and said when she was mayor, she put funds aside to feed the birds. The council was there. This was last year. The council was there, and it didn't change a thing.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that was the mantra that was said was if Bill had only come to the council, this wouldn't have happened.
But do you think there was a complaint that was given and that's what triggered the whole
thing? There was.
Okay. So could you tell us the story about behind that then?
Do you know anything about who complained?
Well, no. No. Well, because the bylaw guys won't do it.
Okay.
Like I just got one 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Come up and knocked on the window and said, we got a complaint. I said, really? And I'm taking photographs? Okay. Here's my driver's license. I have a ticket. I'm going to court.
Mm-hmm.
They staked me out for almost 2 hours, and I watched them with a car running, lights running, and I was trying to catch a goose that had an arrow through it. And I had my big salmon net, which I usually catch them with. And they were waiting for me to bring the corn out. And if I'd have brought that out, they'd been out of their cars and they'd had me.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, that's there's a bylaw violation right there. But that was never, that's just not even a
well, that's not, but at that point, it's not complaint driven, right?
Exactly.
At that point,
he said it was. He said, well, we have a complaint. But I wasn't in the act of feeding the birds. Mm-hmm. I was in getting warm and taking pictures.
So what's the lifespan of a complaint then, I wonder?
don't know.
Well, I think this is really what is at the heart of it, is that when, as long as you have a complaint-driven system, mm-hmm. then it's helter-skelter because, mm-hmm. you know, I might live next door to you and I don't care. We have a 6-foot fence and sure. you know, 7-foot fence in between and, right. you know, we're fine with it. And then all of a sudden I sell my house, Dave moves yeah. in, and all of a sudden he says, I don't like the 6-7-foot fence. I'm going to complain. And then all of a sudden you got to take your fence right. down. It's a very uneven system.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I started last year, January 21st, I got my first ticket February 19th, and then I got a second one, I think, on the 23rd. So had nobody complained, I probably could have fed them all winter.
Right.
And nobody knew the difference.
But there was a complaint. Now, and again, there was a complaint this year as well, right?
Yes, but, well, supposedly.
Right. You
know? So, but that was a month after I started. And that's
so
what I'm saying.
Is it too late for you to make a presentation to council then to apply for an exemption, or are you just thinking, forget it, I'm not doing it?
I've already done it. I did.
Well, you did it last year.
I went through all of this yeah. last year. I still have the paperwork. I still have talked to them, mm-hmm. even this year. And it's set. It is a mindset. And again, I want to stress, this is not about birds. This is about the expansion. I don't care what anybody says.
Is it also about principles, though?
I don't know what principle it is when you turn a place that was a natural habitat and migratory spot into a boatyard, and that's what they have in mind.
But I wonder, in a political sense, is there a principle involved here? Because you seem very angry with the council.
I am very angry with the council.
So, and you're not prepared to go back. You're not prepared to do things. So are there certain principles here at work as well?
I don't know what would be any different than last year. When you have a frustration factor of going in and nothing is resolved, it just keeps carrying on. So I go back in, do a repeat performance to the same people except for three.
Well, three important, but that's a big change, right?
You know,
three new councillors is a pretty big
change. Not when you have a mayor, a deputy mayor, and you have another councillor, you have the majority are the same as last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to change. The tail doesn't wag.
What about the argument that now with the three new people and one of the pre-existing councillors already going through this who support the idea? I mean, I don't think Larry Sherwin, when he was the Parks and Recs councillor, thought that what you were doing was necessarily a bad thing. I just think, you know, it was a violation of the bylaw and therefore the bylaw was being enforced.
I don't think he knew any different because I spoke to him so many times mm-hmm. that I just couldn't converse with him anymore.
I have a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that because the previous council said no, that you would just assume this council is going to say the same thing.
Well, the idea of me as a private citizen and a taxpayer having to go before almost like a court and say, can I have your permission because I've got dying birds out here mm-hmm. and I'm going to pay for it. And if I go ahead and do it on my own volition because I want to see them live, that I'll be fined. There's something wrong with that. I should not have to go to them for permission. I see something wrong, and this is it. Now, if I was down there throwing pizzas at them or doing all kinds of things, I can understand that. I'm providing the food that they can't get in the fields, and as soon as the fields are bare, they're gone. This place is the only thing down in the park are pigeons and seagulls.
Mm-hmm. How did you ever get started with such a passion for...
When did that start? I've always loved animals.
Is that
always.
Right? When you were a little kid?
Always,
well, yes. What was your first experience that you remember where you demonstrated this passion for animals?
Well, I worked on a farm, and I named all the cows. And I did that. We had 35 Holsteins, and I used to milk them, and I had all the names for them. And when it came market time, it broke my heart. Or when the cows ran dry, and I know they're going to market, yeah. I know where they're going. And it just broke my heart. And I thought, I just can't be a farmer because mm-hmm. I become too attached.
Is that right?
And, oh, definitely.
And how did you get particularly interested in birds?
Well, I did one tour in Alaska and Kodiak Island. For 2 years, and bald eagles, the wildlife is just unbelievable. You know, the mm-hmm. fishing, yeah, all that kind of thing. And when you're into that, I mean, that is Valhalla. I mean, it's beautiful. And you really get to see what living's all about. No smog, drink out of the streams. You see all these animals' natural environment. You know, the bears, the elk, you know, the whole works. And you just think, wow, this is what it's about. Mm-hmm. And then you go into a crowded city, and it's smog and people and horn honking and stuff. And I think, you folks don't know how to live.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to pay some bills, but we'll be right back with more of our discussion with Bill Thompson, the Birdman of Coburg, and Rob Washburn. You're listening to The Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Consider This.
Are you a business owner thinking of retiring or selling your business within the next 3 years? If so, call Sunbelt Business Brokers. Their team of professionals make it a worry-free, confidential process and ensure that you end up with maximum dollars. In the past year, they've helped more than 3,000 business owners achieve their goals. Advanced planning can save on taxes and minimize risk. Sunbelt works confidentially, so your clients, staff, and suppliers will not know that you are selling. Call Sunbelt today at 1-888-647-7182 or check sunbeltcanada.com.
Hometown Bingo is your community connection for fun and excitement 7 days a week. Hometown Bingo in Coburg, 884 Division Street, just south of Elgin on the east side. And check out their website at hometownbingo.ca.
For over 25 years, Pritchard's Climate Care has been your personal climate expert in the Northumberland area. Pritchard's offers complete heating and air conditioning service and repair for your home or business. We make sure the air you breathe is healthy and comfortable. Pritchard's Climate Care has been one of Southern Ontario's most trusted installers of heating and air conditioning products. Sign up for our We Care maintenance plans and get your furnace service for half off our regular special price. Pritchard's Climate Care. We're not just your climate experts, we're your neighbors. Call us at 905-885-8216 today.
All aboard!
Make tracks to the Coburg Model Train Show at the Coburg Lion Center Saturday, March 7th. Check out the model train displays, layouts in a variety of scales, vendors selling train supplies, and more. Admission is only $5 for adults, and children 12 and under are just a buck. The Coburg Model Train Show, Saturday, March 7th. Don't miss one of the biggest train shows around for one day only at the Coburg Lion Center.
You've gone and done it again. You agreed to plan your company's dinner party. Where will you hold it this year? Of course, there's nowhere better to hold large events than at the Legion Hall in Coburg. Hold your receptions and private parties at the Legion Hall, and you can get them catered. Call Shelley at 905-372-6554 and book the Legion for your event today. And call Sue at 905-342-2087 for catering.
The Royal Canadian Legion, Branch 133, is located at 136 Orr Street in Coburg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years, and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999.
How do you describe contemporary folk? Acoustic? Yes. Roots? Sure. Americana? That's a newer buzz term, but yep. Celtic? There's a bit of that. Bluegrass? Well, we'll throw some of that in also. On Sunday Coffee House, we'll mix it all together to come up with a show that's pretty diverse with music from the heart, from the soul, from the earth, and sometimes from over there. You can learn more at sundaycoffeehouse.com. Better still, listen. I'm Greg Schatzman. Join me every Sunday at noon for Sunday Coffee House on Northumberland 89.7.
Love that studio audience. Thanks, by the way. If you'd still like to be in our studio audience, please give us a call, 905-372-2321. We can always find a chair for you if you'd like to be here in the studio. With me, Bill Thompson, the Birdman of Coburg, and Rob Washburn. We're talking about the waterfowl issue on Coburg's waterfront. And I guess there's really nothing anyone can say to get you to make a delegation. I mean, if you made a delegation to council, do you think they'd approve your waiver and you'd have no problem? I mean, it's something you'd probably have to do every year. That's the problem, right?
Well, I think in a sense it's almost like a power type thing, saying you have to come so I can pronounce the sentence and say yes, you can and yes, you can't. I'm 74 years old and I don't need somebody to tell me what is right and what's wrong. I see things, and this is what I do. If there's a program or there's a bylaw, whatever, if you're going to have one, it should make common sense. I don't think the bylaw itself was ever enforced until last year.
So you've had a lot of support both years that you've done this.
Definitely.
And just this past weekend, there was a rally down in the harbor. Can you tell us a bit about what happened down there and who came to join you?
It was fantastic. I was overwhelmed because I never really expected that many. I say there were over 100, and they were from places I've never even been to. You know, Pontypool and some of the names I don't remember. But I remember them all showing up, and it was a very, very positive, happy occasion. There was no naysayers or, you know, people coming up and causing problems, whatever. It was all a good group focused on helping the birds.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've also received a lot of publicity around this. I understand
yes,
you've received some national media attention this time around.
Yes, I was on CBC National and Czechs.
So tell me what that experience was like.
Fantastic.
What happened when you were on?
We walked, when Czechs came down there, we walked down through the birds, and I was explaining everything, how it goes, and I was feeding them. And then they were talking about that they had read about the amendment, new amendment. So we talked about that for a little bit. But overall was the impression that everybody got was the positive impression, the relationship myself with the birds. They know me, they know my car, and they come up there, and there's a trust there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe Teresa said one of the things that was mentioned, that if you feed the birds, you domesticate them. That is absolute rubbish. There is no way. You try and walk amongst them. Even when I feed them, if I go down and I walk too fast, they're gone.
Well, just to play devil's advocate here one more time, Bill, because that's what I love to do. So it's a really bad winter out there, the wildlife suffering. I'm a raccoon fan. Maybe I should just start feeding the raccoons then. Is that something that people could do then as well?
People are doing it. People are feeding wild turkeys. Mm-hmm. They're feeding deer. One of the ladies who comes down from Quinte, she's a wildlife custodian mm-hmm. in Quinte, who also came down on the weekend, whatever. That's primarily what she is doing. Is
so,
raccoons.
So people should just be able to do this then during extreme weather conditions? That's your opinion?
To an extent.
Okay.
If the people who are doing it aren't kids who don't know any different or just think, gee, this is fun. If you have genuine people who are concerned, people have bird feeders. You know, they feed everything because it's starving. Mm-hmm. People feed the squirrels. Do you really want to feed the squirrels because, the reputation they have? It's called compassion, I guess, for living creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, without sounding like I'm going too far the other way, development is destroying so much of the land itself that we're getting the coyotes mm-hmm. in, the bears are coming in, whatever. They don't have any choice. And man is doing that. And then we're supposed to think, well, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So one day, I guess everybody will have to go to a zoo to see some of the animals because man will have done away with it. It'll all be paved over.
So in a nutshell, what you're saying is this really isn't, in your opinion, this isn't about feeding the waterfowl. This
definitely
is about
not.
Protecting a natural habitat, an area where these birds have come for millennia to come here and eat what they can when they can get it here. And it's not really about domesticating animals. It's really about providing a source of food for them during times of extreme weather.
Exactly. To see them through because they're gone. Mm.
So again, I have to ask, why wouldn't you apply for an exemption then of the bylaw? I mean, here, let me just give you an example. If I'm having a house party, okay, and I know we're going to be loud probably till 1 a.m, I got a band playing in my backyard. If I go to the town and apply for a bylaw exemption through council, which you can do if you're having a party, by the way, and I would recommend people do this, you can get that bylaw exemption. And if someone calls in to complain about your loud noise, they'll be advised that, hey, yeah, we know about this. They're having a party, and they've told us they're going to be quiet after X hour. Okay. So, again, that's something to avoid the dilemma of having to pay a fine, having to worry about bylaw enforcement. They've already got the heads up that this is something that's going on. I mean, it just seems to me it would be something that you would do, and you wouldn't have to worry about this.
Well, maybe if this was the first year, and this is the second year. Mm. Last year, nothing got accomplished, and we're now into March. Within a few weeks, the birds will be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the council has done nothing except, well, let's amend this and let's do
well,
lots
they've
of
waited
talk.
For you, but they've waited for you to come in and apply for an exemption.
I don't think the council's waiting on me. There's no doubt in my mind they're waiting on me.
But one of the things I guess some people might want to ask is, what expertise do you have in this area? I mean, we're talking about people from the natural resources. They're trained biologists. Mm-hmm. Their laws are written by people who have great expertise in these things. How is it that you can talk the same way that they can talk?
Well, because I've been very interested in all my life, and I have lived in areas where the wildlife are reality. Mm-hmm. And again, the human compassion, it's common sense. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a degree in this, you know, to do anything. You could be a good mechanic. You don't have to have a mechanic's license. There is a lot of knowledge, and if you're super interested in it, this is what you'll do, and you'll learn it all. Most of the information I'm getting from the council is that's all been Googled. I mean, it's verbatim. You could go on Google and get them word by word.
Mm-hmm.
Water pollution. I put the question forward. Coburg prides itself on the water cleanliness and, you know, no red flags or very few red flags in the summertime. If we're not the cleanest beach, we're up there. Yet one of the claims is water pollution from all of these wildfowl. The wildfowl are eating greens. It's all natural. It's all decomposable. Now, that if that's supposed to be destroying the water, it's not, because Coburg Beach would be closed, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't had anybody respond to me yet saying, yes, we had red flags twice during the summer or whatever, because it's...
Well, you know what? One of the things you were talking to just before you got your last fine was the fact that you were helping a Canadian grey goose with, was it an arrow through their arm or something along those
lines? Yes.
Can we talk a little bit about that, about sure. some of the rescue work that you've done? Because, I mean, it's not just the waterfowl that you're helping out here either. I mean, there's some red-tailed hawks that you've helped in the recent past.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this, because a lot of people are just... I mean, I don't want the listeners out there to have the image of this guy who's just gone rogue. I mean, you know, some guy who says, you know, screw the system, I don't care, there's not a bylaw, I don't feel like breaking.
Exactly.
Because I want to talk a bit about the humanitarian, the compassionate aspect, and one of the things that drives you and the injury to some of these birds as well that you are dealing with.
Well, I'll give you the most shocking one, and this only happened a few weeks ago. There was a bird down there, it was shot right through the head. Small entry hole and a large exit. There was no, it was lying right in the boat ramp, small boat ramp. There was no blood on it anywhere else. There were no footprints of animals or man.
Mm-hmm.
I had a man come down today, he said he heard a gunshot last night. So somebody, who knows? But anyway, I have the pictures of it, and that bird was shot.
So somebody's shooting the wildlife now.
Exactly.
But what about the rescue work that you do?
Yes.
Let's talk about that a bit.
Yes.
Okay.
Please.
Well, the first one, I'd say, when I was called there in the 21st of January and the gray lag was there, I could tell it was domestic because it was eating out of my hands, and I had it that close to being captured and taken up to Sandy Pines Refuge.
Tell us a bit about Sandy Pines. What's that?
It is wildlife refuge. It's in Napanee. It's run by Sue Meach and volunteers, and they do a fantastic job because they take in everything. Domestic, there are horses there, there are peacocks, there are squirrels, there are raccoons, ducks, you name it. It is a beautiful place.
So now, how do you capture these animals? How does that work?
I have a big salmon net. In fact, when I caught the last goose that I just brought back today that had a fishing line, it actually was a twine around its leg, and it had eaten halfway through its leg. Well, I was after that, and I finally caught it. But at the same time, I caught three mallards. That's how big my net is.
Wow.
So when I got it down, I just tilted the net up so the mallards could get out, and then I took the goose up to Sandy Pines, and it was up there 2 weeks, and I brought her back today. She's got a limp, but she's all looked after, and I let her go on the harbor, and she went out there, and she's looking for her mate, making noises and looking around. There was one before that, and sadly I never got it, and it had an arrow through it, and it was sticking out about 6 inches, and it was just above its leg, so it didn't injure it, so it was crippled. I was feeding them all, and say I'm hunkered down amongst them, and I just looked down, and all I saw were these internal organs or whatever it was, and this thing sticking out. And I tried to capture it, and it didn't work, and I haven't seen it since, so I don't know. But I did one in Bewdley last year, a practice arrow straight through the body. And I was with M&R, and we caught it. I took it up to Sandy Pines. We cut the arrow off it, the thing. It was a practice arrow, so no feathers or points, just a thing. But it was straight through the body. And I took it up to Sandy Pines. Sue looked after it, and I brought it back, I think it was almost 2 weeks later, and let it go, and its mate was waiting on it. And it was fantastic to watch.
So you've worked with the M&R then in these kinds of situations?
Well, because they're there, yes.
Yeah. So they know about you and they know what you do and how you help? And
yes. Well, last year I gave them a canned goose when I was down on the beach because I didn't know them then. They had all their gear on and big telescopes and all the rest of it. And I thought they were hunter, you know, or photo bugs because there are a lot of photographers down there. And I had a canned goose that had died of starvation that I picked up, and I walked over to them, and I said, you know, do you guys know any taxidermists? And they just kind of smiled a bit, and said, no, we're from M&R. And I said, can we have that? And I said, by all means. And they did, right? They felt it right there, and they said, no muscle mass, emaciated, starvation. And that's what it was. And the ones I picked up, the same thing, is starvation. They're just – the first goose I took up there weighed 2.5 kilos. And I caught it in the harbor because it was so weak, its bill was frozen over. And I broke that off, and I took it up to Sue, and we just got it in the warm water bath, and its head just flopped over. It was dead. And it weighed 2.2 kilos. They go 5 to 9 is normal.
Mm-hmm. So obviously, I mean, no one's arguing the need is there some of the cases we're talking about here. So I guess if you don't want to apply for the exemption, I suppose anyone else could apply for the exemption on compassionate grounds too, which would avoid you. So again, if you are a listener, I'm going to recommend we do this because it doesn't sound to me like Bill's going to go in there and apply for the exemption.
Definitely not.
And it's something, and again, it's something that would have to be done every year. I mean, you know, we don't apply for bylaw exemptions that go on forever, unfortunately. And so I think the biggest help you could get in this situation to avoid any further entanglements with the bylaw enforcement officers would either be yourself or another delegation going on behalf of the wild waterfowl to see if they can get the exemption. And I personally feel that it's something that could be done. And if it's got to be done every year, then that's the way it works with bylaws, unfortunately.
Well, I would think if in fact there is an exemption granted, I'd like the council to pay for it, to pay for the corn. Their private citizens should not be doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, then again, you're asking the town to violate the laws of which they're, you know, sworn to uphold.
Well, this is Joan Chalovich, the prior mayor, did it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, and I think I think that's something that council should ask. They should ask the former mayor to maybe, if not publicly, but maybe an in-camera meeting to talk to her about how they dealt with the dilemma back then. Because obviously there are solutions here.
Yeah.
And going up against the bylaw enforcement people isn't not a solution at this point. All it does is raise the ire, unfortunately.
Well, for the bylaw guys are good. I mean, I know them. And, you know, they're doing their job. I have nothing against them at all.
I have to wonder, though, I mean, when we start talking about tax dollars going towards this, and then the question comes up about, does everybody really support this?
Mm-hmm.
And I respect Mr. Thompson and what he's doing down there. And, you know, by all means, he has every right to take the path that he's taken. But I'm sure there are people that are out there that are saying, you know what, we should just let them die.
And
you know, that's fine. Again, everybody's got their
own
opinion.
It's the law of nature.
The law of nature, people. Yeah, so be it. But I think when you start getting in and saying, should council pay for things, I really wonder if it is really something that deserves public tax dollars to fund. I think if individuals want to do this and they want to come and rally behind Bill here and put their financial support or, you know, support in whatever way they want, you know, God bless, and as long as they've got the exemption, so be it. But I think when we start talking about the town getting involved and the town supporting it and the town paying for it, I think there'd be enough people that would be upset that I think that would just complicate things more than it would help. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think with the amount of money that's being thrown around these days by the council for signs and all the rest of it, this is nothing. But councillors, mayor, etc., they're all human beings as well. So why aren't they playing a part? In essence, the default from the council is no. Come on up and convince us that we should allow you to do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're up again because you're applying for the exemption to an existing bylaw. This is, I mean, that's really the issue the council has, I think, at this point. For them, it's a matter of we've got this bylaw, and yes, it's complaint driven. I mean, Pete Fisher made the point earlier, and he's made it on my show a couple of times, that if there's a bylaw out there, it should be enforced every single time. They shouldn't have to wait for someone to complain. But unfortunately, we're a small town. We don't have the ability to finance a full-time bylaw enforcement team that can focus specifically on that. Because you're right, in the summertime, it's ridiculous.
I live right there, and I see it. And littering. I mean, has anybody ever had a littering ticket? I doubt it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill, you know what?
I can go on and on.
Well, no, it's been great having you here anyway. Is there one message, is there one thing that you want to get out there, maybe not necessarily to the council, but to the folks that are listening out there here at Northumberland 89.7, what is the message you want to bring to them? Because, you know, you raised a point earlier about how people have bird feeders in their backyard. I mean, technically, they're feeding wild animals. Is there a bylaw enforcement for people who have bird feeders in their yard? And if not, then why are you being, if you will, vilified for trying to preserve the life of the waterfowl? Is there one message you think you can get out there?
The only message I'd say is common sense. Common sense and compassion, and not to get bogged down in paperwork and passing laws that are redundant and don't really apply realistically. You should be able to look out the door and say, we've got a problem, let's go fix it. Not let's just go and see if there's a bylaw that covers it, or I'm afraid of doing this in case I get fined. That shouldn't be that way.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to fight the ticket you've got?
Definitely.
And are you going to do the same kind of appeal that you made the last time you were in court?
Well, yes, because, I mean, I'm not doing anything different. In the last year when I got my first ticket, of course, I didn't have a defense. The judge actually became my defense, and he threw the case out because I wasn't given a copy of the bylaw and disclosure.
Mm-hmm. Have you received those now?
No. I haven't received that yet either.
You still haven't received them?
No. And I just sent the ticket back I forget how many days ago, saying, I'm contesting it, and I'm waiting for a court date.
And so is it your feeling that it'll be tossed again this time?
Probably not. Because I think one of the technicalities was, can you prove that it was that he was feeding the birds on municipal or federal land? The harbor belongs to the town, doesn't it? Does it?
That's a good question. I don't know if the harbor belongs to the town.
If not, it may belong to the feds. If not, I could feed below the high water line, and there's nothing they could do about it. If that's a law.
So again, then if we can find a way of cherry picking our way around the bylaw. Mm. So again, so just for the listeners, we've been speaking to Bill Thompson. He is the gentleman who's been made famous, actually, across the country on CBC and here locally for feeding the waterfowl, keeping the birds alive. Now, he says it's compassionate and human grounds. Rob, you got another point?
No, I just was going to say before we part, I think it's really important to talk about this bylaw enforcement. I think this is the deeper issue. And I know you've got some really strong feelings about, Dave, about how bylaws are being enforced. And we've talked about the Boulevard, you and I before, mm-hmm. Boulevard Gardens, and mm-hmm. how that's been handled. And you were mentioning earlier about how Pete was talking about uniform enforcement and whether or not I think council has to revisit this. And I think, you know, Henderson in his budget deliberations and as they're setting a strategic vision, I think this is something that they've really got to come to grips with, because until they can start to do this with an even hand, mm-hmm. and that it's going to be enforceable and that the penalties are going to be met and it's done in a serious way, I think it just all it's going to do is perpetually frustrate people across the board, whether it's you're building a fence or you're putting
up
a gazebo.
How about no smoking on the beach?
Littering, whatever.
Oh, yeah. How are they going to enforce that? That's a good point.
So,
new bylaw, no smoking on the beach. Really? Okay.
So
force that one.
I think this is the bigger picture that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank Bill Thompson for being here. Bill, always a pleasure to talk to you. I know Bill, by the way, in my non-on-air personality. He's actually a neighbor to my brother-in-law, so we have partied, you know. But, no, this is a great opportunity to speak with you and really get an opportunity to clearly delineate to the listeners. We've had almost an hour now talking about why you're doing what you're doing, what the opposition has been, and whether folks are in favor or not in favor of it. I think, as you say, it's about humanity. It's about compassion. And it's about making sure that the waterfowl that is here isn't just
you know, allowed to freeze to death and or starve to death. As you say, you found ones like less than 2 kilograms in weight. So, again, just ridiculous. Rob, always a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks so much, Dave.
We are going to close the show out with a little, here we go. Here is the Moody Manitoba and the Bells here on Northumberland 89.7. Thank you for listening to Northumberland 89.7. I'm Dave Glover. Coming up at the top of the hour, by the way, is Hayes and Bell in episode 5 of their great show here. So that's the Cedar Rail Show. So stick around for that. Here's the Bells.
Bring me up.